Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour for March 26, 2020. And remember back in the old days when, everybody was planning there was, let's go back and go through some of the eras back in the, remember the 2000 bug where all the computers were supposed to crash and we were all going to die. And that's what really sparked the emergence of gravity water filters as a known commodity. They existed before that. But then, remember, it was called the millennial bug. Like at the end of the millennia, which is a thousand-year period, 2000 was supposed to begin the end of the world. And then we had, let me see, the whole Planet X thing, 2003, we're all supposed to die. Crazy lady talks to aliens. What was it? May 15th, 2003. We're all supposed to die. And then there was the ongoing Planet X craziness that occurred. And I was the only sane voice in that whole era. But, there was another era of, every other month there was supposed to be a Planet X prediction. And it went on for a long time until people finally didn't pay any more attention to it. Then there was the 2012. Remember the Mayan calendar 2012? The end of the era, like the, Middle Earth was going to end or something. And then on and on and on. And so, during this whole time, and then remember there were television shows about preppers, making fun of preppers, like there were a bunch of nutcases, planning for the future and doomsday and, we're all going to die type scenarios, and which they were afraid of the government. And of course, then there was actually the Obama era when arms sales to private citizens and ammunition sales just went into absolute orbit. We had the Lavoie Finicum, a guy just going from one county to the next gets ambushed by UN troops in the middle of the winter and shot dead, and everybody in the car almost shot dead by UN troops. This was at the hand of Obama. Or remember down in Nevada, the standoff? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, those talk about the good old days. But through this whole time, people preparing for the ultimate disaster in which the government tries to come in. And it's, most scenarios, whether it was natural or man-made or economic or caused by the government, the idea was that you should buy storage food, have a water filter, et cetera. So anyway, it turns out that the preppers were right. The people who were preparing, try and find simple things today that a prepper would have a goodly supply. And the other thing that I said throughout this whole process, I don't consider myself a prepper so much as a person who's prepared. Something I learned in the Boy Scouts when I was a young person. But being prepared simply means having enough to take care of yourself. It's taking care of yourself. But the other thing that I always told people was that when the chips are down, you're going to see people that you thought were reliable, people that were stable, come unglued, and you're going to see other people who you thought were like little wimps in the corner come rising through with flying colors and be completely helpful and cooperative. There's nothing worse than somebody who thinks they're boss of everybody and starts eating all the food and everything else because they don't know how to manage themselves. So anyway, but I want to jump into a real topic here, a very important topic. The other day, I wrote a letter to a person who I've had contact with over a period of time. His name is Robert David Steele, and a lot of you, I'm sure, know about him and know of his writings and his efforts, etc. He spent much of his life in the intelligence communities and now is a person who's trying to bring some sanity into the world. At any rate, I wrote him a letter, and I want to read it to you because the following day, all you-know-what broke loose, and a lot of people have been reporting around this topic. But yesterday, all of what I said finally hit the, a lot of places, including, Gordon Duff, senior editor at Veterans Today, and of course, Robert David Steele himself. But I want to read my letter to you. This is exactly what I wrote. And it says, Questions for Trump is the subject title of the email. It says, Robert, possibly you have access to Prez Trump. I think he needs some coaching and we need some real answers to some real questions. Why did China not open up to Trump when he started getting info from Wuhan area about the breakout of the epidemic? Because China was looking for the source. They knew it was a bioweapon and that there were only a few places on Earth that this could come from, including the United States. Why has no one, either in the DOJ or any other government agency or the news media from any source, investigated the more than 40 U.S. military athletes who were in the Wuhan area for the Military Olympics in October, hosted by China? Who were these people? They certainly were not athletes. They stayed a few blocks from the Chinese Level 4 biolab and near the fish market. They did not participate in the games, but were a social scourge, molesting women and causing other issues on the local level, but they did not participate in the games. They came in something like 42nd, I believe actually it was like 38th or something, but way down the line. They came in 42nd out of 50 nations with not a single gold medal. The USA military, that is the best, is that the best they can do? A variety of nations, including Italy and China, have asked about this, but Trump seems completely oblivious to this issue. That is why China did not open up to the USA, because they suspected this military virus came from the USA. This group came from Washington State, talking about the athletes. This group came from Washington State, which is where one of the early outbreaks in the USA occurred. The pattern of first cases in the USA did not fit a pattern of cause and effect. It was like someone was dropping this thing off to get it started in certain places. Are there still people dropping this off around the USA? And could we see a large increase at some point, especially if it starts to be contained at the hands of the people dropping this off? Why is WHO and the CDC making no effort to vector patients? Tracking and publishing this information, not the names, but the locations where these people have been, is the only way that they are going to contain the spread of the virus. This John Hopkins thing, Bloomberg-supported medical school, of just mapping the occurrences shows that they are letting it do a slow spread. What is the test testing for, and is it accurate? Allegedly has an 80% false positive rate. China is over the lockdown and is 100% functional again, 100%. I have contacts and business dealings in China, and they are all back to work with a watchful eye so this does not come back in. They mapped all of the cases and where they came from and have it 100% contained. Why is the USA not following the same vectoring protocol? Trump and Chatty Cathy mail doll Mike Pence pull his string and he spouts some platitude. Yes, Trump seems to think this thing just fell out of the sky one day. Trump must be getting the impression that WHO and the CDC and his weasel Fauci are part of the problem and not the solution. Why are they so intent on the vaccination thing? This, even if developed, would do nothing for those already infected. We need a treatment, cheap, simple, and available worldwide. These are coming out of the woodwork all over the place. Every time Trump mentions this, he gets the officialdom BS that we have to wait for a clinical trial. As if a guy dying coughing his lungs out is going to worry about some minor side effect from a drug or remedy that will stop him from dying a most horrible death. Trump must be getting a clue that they are not interested in a cure. I could go on. This is a starting point. I don't have the president's ear. Maybe you do, James McCanney. So that's the letter I wrote to Robert David Steele, and look in Veterans Today yesterday in the successive articles, and it appears that hopefully this kicked things off in the right direction. And of course, these people have been tracking this issue all along also. But if I can do something, even if it's just put a pin in things to make them move along farther, that's what I'll do. And by the way, if you go to Robert David Steele's webpage, I have an article there that I wrote. And you can actually find the link there. He still has it posted there. Go to my webpage, scroll down below all of the top initial things, and just scroll way down. It's I think, fairly close to the middle or the bottom of the page. So your scroll marker is about halfway down the page. And it's very indiscreet. It's in the middle. It's just it says letter from me to the president, but it's through Robert David Steele. And so look at that, and that's where I go through the seven biggest problems in the world today. And that was based on a conversation I had with Robert David Steele a long time ago, maybe last summer. I don't even remember. It was a long, in the last year, I believe. But go to my website, scroll down. You will see the letter that I formalized, and then Robert David Steele put it on his webpage. And I go into the CIA. What we're discovering here is what I've been saying all along. This had the markings of the CIA all over it. And in their investigation, they came up with another agency called USAID. They always have these front agencies that sound like they're so just humanistic, just so beneficial. And so at any rate, no, I'll tell you, the CIA is a bunch of seething, corrupt, just horrific people. It's got to be done away with. The CIA, and a lot of people agree with me on that. I have seen them personally enough. I don't know everything about the CIA. There might be some okay people working there, but the CIA is not an American agency. It has nothing to do. It never did have anything to do with the USA. The people like George Bush, who was the head of the CIA, they are the police force of the World Bank, housed in the United States, and they run the biggest drug human trafficking operation in the world, on and on. They have basically a chaos deluxe operation in every country in the world, toppling governments, installing presidents and other people and all in the political scene that favor the World Banks. And by the way, right now, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, is coming in to all of these third world countries, and they're coming in and giving big loans, and their CIA-installed henchmen in these countries are signing on the dotted line for this huge amount of money that'll never get to the people. It'll be divided up amongst the very top people in these countries and simply make them richer and more powerful. So, so you go through any Latin American or Mideast, or you picked your country, Africa, wherever, you'll find the markings of the CIA all over it, with the disaster and the people living in the dirt, the common people, destroying the lives of hundreds of millions, literally billions of people's lives destroyed by the CIA. And this latest virus issue is a direct result for them. I'll just tell you, it has their earmarkings all over it, and it has just taken the entire world and set it open and opened up the doors for their banker bosses to come in, including the United States. $6 trillion. You just got labeled. You're listening to this. You, as people living in the United States, just got labeled with a $6 trillion bill. That's going to be interest compounded over this years, over the centuries. And all in the middle, when the economy was booming, everything was going great. We were trading with China. Everything was being well organized. And all of a sudden, this thing came along. And let me tell you, these people ought to be hung from the highest yardarm. That is what should happen. And make no mistake, when I say these people, I am talking about the CIA. I'm talking about Bill Gates and Melinda and their foundation. And I saw Bill, oh, woo-hoo. He was going, we should have done more sooner. Here's the guy that owns the patent on ID 2020, the ID that would be injected into you by the vaccinations that they were hoping this. See, let me tell you something. This thing was supposed to be off, and there were supposed to be hundreds of thousands of people dead in the USA by now, where people would be clamoring for a vaccination. And so anyway, then they would come marching in, Bill Gates, yep, with his henchmen, and also inject you with an ID. So they could keep track of you so that you didn't pass this off to someone else. That's what was supposed to happen. But Trump shut the door on China travel very early. And Trump has got to wake up. He's the guy with his hand on the helm here, on the wheel, and the captain's wheel. And he's got to figure out that these people, and it's more than the CIA. That's just the root component of this. There's a lot more groups and people involved in this. And this is no longer funny. This is a very, very serious business. Okay, I'm going to switch away from that topic. A couple other issues here. I personally have a clinical trial that's going on right now, dealing with a very simple solution, a treatment for the coronavirus, for the current. And so I'm not going to say any more about that, other than there are a lot of people trying to contribute to this. And if I can make some type of a contribution, that would be great. Italy recently rejected vaccinations as a country. They threw out all of their cronies in the medical industry, the revolving door, and they realizing now that the vaccinations, the damage it's doing on the public. And all I can say is I will be pounding on this topic myself. A lot of other people have been pounding on it, that there is no evidence that these vaccinations work. I've talked about that before. I've got a lot of other topics to cover tonight. So, here's the thing. The last thing, another point that I haven't made before, the last thing that the vaccination pharmaceutical companies want, the last thing they want is for a bunch of healthy people to be walking around that have not been vaccinated. That's why they want to go for this herd vaccination thing, like everybody's got to be vaccinated or it doesn't work. Well, that's contradictory, as I've described before. But the last thing they want is like a country to say, okay, no vaccinations, and all of a sudden they start producing these healthy, happy, non-diseased people. The measles was, and other childhood diseases were eradicated simply by quarantine long before the shots ever came around. Okay, so anyway, let me just see if I have some other points here. Is the coronavirus test accurate? That's a very important issue right now. What are they really testing for? What is this test all about? When people test positive, are they really positive? And, you know, there's so many questions here. It's not being done in a scientific manner. How did Harvey Weinstein all of a sudden get it? And it looks like there are people who are going to start to use this to opt out of many things, including people in prison, etc. Rand Paul, who is complaining about the whole issue, all of a sudden turns up and he's got a positive result testing for the coronavirus. There's a story that came in this week down in Arizona. I've seen this place. I've been there in person. It's about 90 miles outside of Phoenix. It is called, let me see, I don't have it in my notes here, but it's basically a graveyard for airplanes. They've got classic airplanes going back to World War II that are parked out there in the desert, and it's a dry place where they can just go set. But airlines now are starting to park their jets out there, including some of the big ones, the 777, the wide bodies, and other planes that these companies, you know, there's, I don't know if you know it, but at any given time in the United States, there are 7,000 jetliners in the air at any given time. It's unbelievable. It's just crisscrossing this country. And so now that the airlines are shutting down, they're starting to park these airplanes. They're flying them in to this graveyard. It's basically a runway in the middle of the desert. And there's, I think down by Tucson, there's another one. But anyway, they're flying the airplanes in there to park them. And I guess my worry is that once you park these planes, a machine like that has to be operated continually and maintained continually. So parking them in the middle of the desert is not a good idea. Okay, let me see. Just want to mention, I've done a number of interviews on the coronavirus issue. It was March 18th, first hour with John Morshow. And by the way, yesterday, my connection went out, so I missed the John Morshow yesterday morning. And then on March 19th, I called in during the first hour. Dr. Len Horowitz was the guest, and I called in for some commentary. I think it was, I can't remember what part of the show, but that was also, I believe, first hour on March 19th. That's also on John Morshow. And then on March 22nd, this past Sunday evening, I was a guest on James Fetzer's show, The Real Deal. And I think he's changed that to The Raw Deal. And then I have some other interviews coming up. I'll be talking about them as the time approaches. This is a story that came out of the coronavirus issue, that Paris, imagine this, Paris has almost 250,000 homeless people living on its streets. And now, I mean, that's just staggering. 250,000 people living on the streets of Paris. That's what happens when you get, this is what basically the New World Order, the socialism, etc., that's where it leads. High taxes, all kinds of restrictions put on businesses to suck money out of them. The businesses, especially the small businesses, cannot support other employees, and so they have part-time employees. The people cannot even afford housing and become homeless. People sleeping in their cars, working at a restaurant or something. That's, you know, that's liberalism. That's socialism. That's how it works. How would you like to be somebody on a cruise ship? There are cruise ships that are out on the ocean that have fully occupied cruise ships. Some of these people have up to 7,000 people on them, between the staff and the passengers, and nobody will let them in port because they've been identified with coronavirus. And so imagine that, riding around on a cruise ship with no place to go, eventually running out of fuel and food and services. That's got to be the world's best time. Oh, my goodness. Here's what it's called, this place outside of Phoenix. It's called the Pinal Air Park, P-I-N-A-L. That's an interesting name. It's not named after Mr. Pinal. It's now, that's like basically prison for aircraft. That's what it's called outside of Phoenix, the Pinal, P-I-N-A-L, Air Park. That's what it's called. Okay, just a quick note on the status of the wing generator. Everything is in production. Everything, the whole issue is the final leg of transportation, getting it to the location of the people in the United States because everything is shut down. So anyway, I'm going to be working on that, and that's something I'm trying to work through because it takes about a month and a half once somebody puts in an order to get everything assembled and then ready to ship out to them. But if in a month and a half there's no shipping available, then people have, you know, it's a quagmire. Let me just put it that way. Here's something, a question I have. Trump is saying that they're going to start sending out checks to people, $3,000 check for a family of four. Well, what about the homeless people? What about people who, where did they get the addresses? Where do they get the number of people in the house? We haven't had a survey for 10 years. Are they going to use IRS tax rolls? I mean, how are they going to determine this? And frankly, if somebody wants to send something to me, I don't know if I really want it. I'll be honest with you. But where are they going to send it to for all of these people out there? There are, you know, I don't know. This is where did they get the address list for the people they're going to send it to? And are they using voter rolls? Because those are false. Those are falsified. Absolutely insane. But the other thing is, I had a friend of mine run some numbers. This $6 trillion is the equivalent of $80,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States. That means that they're taking out basically an IMF loan for $80,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States, but only giving out $3,000 for a family of four. Where's the disparity here? I mean, who's going to get all this money? Oh, my goodness. The corruption is just I can just see the big corporations standing up there to guzzle in, you know, tens of billions of dollars, you know, like the airline businesses or telecommunications or who knows. But I doubt if I'll get a penny out of that, nor would I want to, because it's just going to put a big burdensome payload of debt onto everybody. I advertised on my webpage, Comet Atlas, coming into the solar system right now, official designation C2019Y4. That's the official, and it's called Atlas because it was discovered by an automated search telescope system called Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System. I'll say it fast. Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System. And that's the mnemonic they determined was ATLAS, A-T-L-A-S, search. But anyway, back in 2019, they discovered this ATLAS comet. And it was coming in kind of from the north. It's going to swing around the sun, and it's on what they call a parabolic orbit. A parabolic orbit is an open orbit, but I should modify that and say that it's a near parabolic orbit. In other words, it goes almost all the way out to infinity, but not quite. But it turns out that this is on a 6,000-year orbit. And the first thing I want to say is that it is not Earth-threatening. There's not a direct issue. There's no electrical alignments with either Earth or any of the other planets, for a matter of fact. And so what I want to do here is I want to read off let me find this here. Whoops, I have to pull this up so I can read it. And here it is, the write-up that I had on my page. I'm simply going to read it. I took it down because for a certain couple of reasons. But anyway, here, and then I'll go through some more analysis after I read this. This is a quick hip pocket analysis of Comet Atlas. It does not pose any immediate threat to Earthlings or Earth, but read on. It will cross the ecliptic, that's the plane of the planets, actually Earth's plane in the solar system, Earth, the orbit of Earth, the plane that Earth's orbit is in the solar system is called the ecliptic. So this comet on its path will cross the ecliptic on May 31st. That's its closest approach to the sun also, and inside the orbit of Mercury, although Mercury itself will be on the far side of the sun at the time. So it's not going to have an interaction with Mercury. At this point, it will be passing to the right side of the sun from our vantage point, making it an early morning comet. And then I have in capital letters, do not look at the sun. And I'll expand on that. Never look at the sun, and especially don't ever look at the sun with magnifying equipment like telescopes or binoculars. Never look at the sun. Never look at the sun with your eyes. It will burn them. Then I go on to say, talking about Comet Atlas, it will not have any electrical alignments with Earth or any other planets. But watch for the solar observatory images of the comet sun interactions causing potentially large to huge solar flaring, as well as comet brightening. Also, be prepared for the standard astronomy community to state that this flaring is just happenstance, although the sun has been completely quiescent for a very long time. At any rate, get ready for a light show. This comet is expected to be a daytime comet in the northern hemisphere. That's where most of us live. And what I will venture to say, some healthy solar interactions and major solar flare reactions as it discharges the solar capacitor while in the vicinity of the sun. These flares could be directed in directions we are unable to predict at this time. We will have to wait and see. The comet is green because it is lighting up like a light bulb due to the electrical current passing through the comet, all explained in my theoretical work. The comet could react by extending a bright sunward spike, something astronomers deny. They are collectively comet spike deniers. And since the observation will be broadside to the comet, this observation will prove once again the McCanny plasma discharge comet model. Be prepared for the fake news to drench you in dirty snowball propaganda and verbiage. You will need your chest-high hip boots to wade through the BS. Then I put the date, March 22nd, 2020, my name, etc. And so anyway, that was the posting at the top of my webpage. Now I want to go into a bit of a conversation about long-term comets. There could be, and we don't know because we don't have the historical data, but we know that natives around indigenous people all around the world have painted pictures of comets. And these were done long ago. In a lot of cases, we don't know when. There was one done at the Green River, Utah. The picture of that is on my Planet X Comets and Earth Changes, the cover of that book. But we could have comets that have 10,000, 20,000, 100,000, a million years or even more orbits that were here in the solar system long, long time ago and are going to come back. I mean, they could come back any time. We don't know. But here's the issue. Here's the issue. Imagine that a large comet, came in the solar system and ravaged a particular planet or series of planets or Earth on a previous visit to the solar system. The probability that it's going to interact with that planet again on a future visit is extremely small. Because you understand that take the Earth, for example, we're moving around in our orbit, around the sun. And so if something interacted with us, say, 6,000 years ago, which I'm not saying this comet Atlas did, I'm just saying hypothetically, if something interacted with Earth 6,000 years ago, by the time it comes around and slows down again and comes into the solar system, the probability that it would interact with Earth again is pretty, pretty small. And so that's why during the whole Planet X craze, where people talked about wormwood, etc., the whole issue was that the people assumed that if Planet X came back, it would interact with Earth again, which is totally false. If it interacted with Earth before, the probability when it came back on its orbit, the probability that it would interact with Earth would be almost zero. And then the next time, almost zero again. There's a possibility of some remote interactions. But a very close interaction, what I'm saying, is a very rare incident. And for the same comet to do it once or twice would be extremely, extremely rare. But I pointed out that there are many, many Planet X objects in not only in the solar system, but associated with our solar system. But these things can come in from way beyond these open orbits, the hyperbolic or the parabolic orbits that are open-ended, where something comes in, whips around the sun, and then it leaves and it never comes back. But there's a couple capturing agents that can slow them down to the point where they become trapped into our solar system. One of them is the tail drag, where the discharge, the comet is discharging the solar capacitor, charging up, and the pulling in the ionized tail material. And it's that tail drag that actually slows the comet nucleus down. So that's one particular method. And the other one is simply by what they call perturbation. When it comes near a planet, then its orbit can be, the comet's orbit can be modified to bring it into a closed orbit around the sun. And then it has a long period of time when it can lose the eccentricity. That's the eccentricity has to do with the stretched outness, if you want to use a made-up word. But the longer the elliptical orbit, the lower the ellipse's property, which is called the eccentricity. Eccentricity is a mathematical term for an ellipse. With the ellipse having eccentricity 1 being a circle. And so those are some technical terms. But I wanted to mention this is a very interesting point about near-parabolic orbits of comets, that our history of studying these only goes back a little over 300 years to the year 1680, when the Great Comet of 1680 passed through the solar system. So it's actually about 340 years ago. But that's a very, very short time relative to the age of the solar system, which potentially is billions of years, or certainly a long time. And it might be much older. I don't believe the constant reference to the Earth and the solar system we live in being 4.5 billion years old. I don't buy that for a second. That's just a made-up number. It's a fictitious number that everybody's jumped on, and it really has nothing to do with reality. Because, very simply put, somebody picked up a rock on the surface of the Earth and allegedly on the surface of the Moon, and they did some analysis. Somebody came up with 4.5 billion years, and they said, okay, that's the age of the Earth. The only problem is that you don't have access to rocks that are even down a short distance in the Earth, let alone going all the way down to the core. So it's finding a rock on the surface of the Earth and trying to put a date on when the Earth formed is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, ludicrous, whatever term you want to use. My point is that this is a comet we're seeing for the first time in modern history. It was here about 6,000 years ago, and prior to that, probably maybe if it didn't have any interactions with the other planets, maybe 12,000 or 13,000 years before the present time. You know, going back, and each time it comes into the solar system, it's going to lose a little bit of its energy. It's going to lose its velocity, fall in closer to the sun by a little bit, and then come back in less than 6,000 years on the next trip around. It was interesting to note that Hale-Bopp, the big comet, lost a lot of its orbital period during the time it was here in the solar system back in the mid-1990s. And by the way, I have a very good DVD on the topic of Hale-Bopp. It's called Planet X, Hale-Bopp, Harrington Expedition Update. It's an DVD available on my website, where I go through a lot of what I learned about Halebop and Planet X and all a lot of related topics. Okay, so, but there again, once again, what I want to stress here is there are objects out there that we don't know when they were here. We don't know when they're going to come back, but all of a sudden, you have one like this comet, Atlas, that was discovered in 2019. The last time it was here was about 6,000 years ago. And if you look at its orbit, being as it comes through the inside of Mercury's orbit, very near the sun, it's really it's hard to say, but it does not look like it ever had a good interaction with, say, Earth or Earth's orbit. In fact, at this point, we don't know if this what size this comet is. They say it is brightening quite a bit. So at any point here, you can go out in the morning sky and watch the morning sky, and you possibly can see this before dawn, before the sunrise. Now, there are a couple other issues I mentioned in the write-up that came from my webpage, which, by the way, I had taken down, so the only record of that now is in my broadcast here. But there's a couple things I want to stress. First of all, the solar flaring, and then I'll get into the sunward spike, give a little bit more information on that. And that's potentially something that you could see with the naked eye. And because this comet is going to be a bright one from what they're saying. That's the analysis that this is going to become a very bright comet. And it will be visible possibly as bright as the full moon. And you know from looking up in the sky that you can see the moon up in the sky in the daytime. Now, relative to solar flaring, here's something that you might be able to observe with this comet when it's early morning before sunrise, and that's getting closer to May 31st. Prior to May 31st, you'll probably see this comet in the northern hemisphere in the daytime. So it'll be, if you're looking towards the south, and this is winter time, then it would be in the northern sky above the sun, basically. Wherever the sun is in the sky, it would be above it, and with the tail facing away from the sun. Okay, so, and of course, the tail faces away from the sun, because the comet is discharging the solar capacitor, which is radially distributed around the sun. Okay, so back to the idea of what could you potentially see if this thing starts to interact electrically with the sun? Well, you could see the comet all of a sudden brightening considerably. So that's one of the things you potentially would be able to see. And then if you go to the various solar observatories that still report these solar conditions and have television monitors of the sun, then you could go to those websites and actually see the solar flaring. And I'm not sure in the field of view if you'll be able to actually see the comet. It's kind of out there. I don't know if it'll be close enough to where the solar observatory images of the sun will include the comet or not. But you can determine where the comet is simply by observing it and understand that when the comet gets down to the ecliptic, that's the plane of the planets, then it will be at that point is the largest probability that it's going to have a physical interaction with the sun. So around May 28th, we could potentially start to see that sunward spike. So you would see the comet tail pulling off in one direction and then towards the direction of the sun, a very thin plasma, basically a discharge, that's what it is, interacting with the material in outer space, of which there's not much, but on a grand scale, there's quite a bit. And so anyway, the what you would expect to see is the sunward spike. And would a comet have a sunward spike that's visible from Earth? And the answer is yes. Once again, if you refer to my book, Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes, and look at the drawings that were drawn in the Green River, Utah area by an indigenous group of people or indigenous person, and very clearly they have sunward spikes. And they're squiggly. They're kind of like a pigtail, so to speak, is that squiggly, wiggly like form. But anyway, that's characteristic of electrons moving up through a magnetic field. That cyclotron type of radiation, and that's where the X-rays are, by the way, out in that region. So this is a place where X-rays and comets could be formed, and that's one of my main predictions. If you go back to my original papers that came out of my Cornell years, that's one of my main predictions was X-rays to the sunward side of comets. And it's called Bremsstrahlung X-rays. Bremsstrahlung is a German word for breaking, and I had identified that very early on as one of the characteristic signs of the plasma discharge comet model. So anyway, we can see all of this potentially coming up in this comet in the next number of weeks, well, more towards the end of May. So I would say about the beginning of May, they said that this comet could become visible to the naked eye right now. So potentially this could be visible in the certainly in the night sky for a period of time, and then visible both at night and in the daytime. If you're in a location where it's up during the daytime, you could potentially see it in the daytime also up in the sky. So that's a very bright comet. That's a very bright comet. And if you remember, Hale-Bopp was, if you were around back in the mid-90s, which I was, I remember walking around on a cold winter night, looking up in the sky and seeing it. It was about evening time, as I recall. It was up in, actually in Minnesota at that time. That's when I used to live up there, and it was cold. It was snow on the ground, and there was Hale-Bopp up in the sky. It was visible to the naked eye for a period of 6 years, something tremendously unusual for a comet. So at any rate, those two issues, you can look on the Solar Observatory web pages for solar flaring, especially as it gets down to around that May 31st time frame. And like I said, there's no electrical alignments affiliated with Earth or Venus, etc. And I've looked in detail to make sure that I wasn't missing something. But there's a catch to it. There is a catch. There's always a catch. And it's the following, that if the comet, and I believe it's going to interact electrically with the sun. It's going to come inside Mercury's orbit. So it's going to have a pretty big pop. It's going to be like a spark plug setting off a big ignition solar flare coming out towards the comet. Okay, well, that's one part, but the solar flaring can go out in other directions. So one of the primary directions will be directed at the comet itself, but then it could be solar flaring is very random and a lot of chance involved, but the solar flare could then come out and affect us on Earth with Earth weather, with a solar flare-induced Earth weather. And so that's a potential issue around the end of May also, that the comet could interact with the sun. The sun kicks out a huge solar flare, and it's Earth-directed. But that is a faint probability, but it's possible. That's something that definitely could happen. But I believe that there will be flaring, and the flaring will probably go off into interplanetary space without affecting too much at all. That's my own personal belief, that it would be very unlikely that there would be any solar flaring that would affect Earth or Earth's weather, but you can't count it out. We have to wait and see. So at any rate, but my basic statement is that there's really not a reason to worry here. There's no need for internet craziness. The other thing I should point out is if this were back in the 90s or the early 2000s, there would be people jumping all over this like, oh, it's the end of the world and, you know, whatever. People misquoting me maybe. Who knows? Things were pretty Looney Tune back there, back in the old days. And I've been through all of these. I had a conversation with somebody that's quite famous on the internet, on YouTube, and somebody I'm sure you've all had experiences with, dealing with the moon, the alleged moon program. But anyway, had a discussion back and forth, and in talking about my work, I said, you know, I go back to the late 1970s. I was at, managed to end up teaching at Cornell University. And there at exactly the time when all this data was coming in from around the solar system. But then through the 1980s, I was active. I was one of a very well-known scientist. That's where I visited Los Alamos, gave some invited talks and other invited talks to military groups, closed session military groups. I gave a talk at the Airspace America Air Show out in San Diego where I met a guy named Bert Rutan. That's through the 80s. And then the 90s, of course, started the Hale-Bopp era, where it was actually discovered in 1989 by Robert Harrington, U.S. Naval Observatory Director. And that's when the whole Hale-Bopp issue started, which carried into the 2000s. And, of course, I was, say, a guest on Art Bell's show back in those days, the Hale-Bopp days, where Art had been accused of all kinds of things, including being responsible for the death of a bunch of 30-some people out in the Palo Alto area, the Palo Verde area of L.A., which he had nothing to do with. And it was some very crazy times. And, of course, my comet work was central to all of that, showing that Hale-Bopp was a plasma discharge comet, not a dirty snowball. And, you know, and the Russians were very much involved in that. And then there was the Schumacher-Levy 9 comet that came into the dark side of Jupiter. That was in that era also. And then once again, the Russians proved dramatically that my plasma discharge comet model was correct. And then they also, at around that time, they were dealing with them directly with the atmospheric weather issues and then creating the scenarios and the equipment designs to manage hurricanes, which got absconded with by the U.S. military. And by 2000, the early 2000s, the U.S. military was launching big laser satellites to control the weather, and that's when all the hurricane manipulation against the United States started. That's where that started. And the Russians went to the U.N. and said, hey, they've got these weather-inducing machines up there in outer space, and they have to be called weaponry. They cannot use it against civilians, and that's exactly what the U.S. military did. But then you had 9/11. Starting in the 2000s, and that's where a crazy lady talks to aliens. We're all going to die. The whole 2000s, all of the Planet X craziness. That's when my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, came out, and on and on. But anyway, what I was explaining is that I've been through the late 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s up to now, and now we're starting 2020. And, you know, really, I'm still at the top of my game. And when people want to know something, when they want to hear something, it's, whether it's the coronavirus or something else, they turn to me because they know I give straight information. This show has been on the air 20 years, commercial-free, no sponsors. I pay the airtime myself. So at any rate, and you help me by making purchases. I just want to talk a little bit about the status of water filters and where they are today. We have run out of stainless steel containers, both the full-size kitchen standard and the travelers. Now, we ran out last week. We will not be getting any more of those for a long time. The factory in the United States is still producing the GF, the JMCC GF filter elements. We had a huge shipment last week that went out, and we're almost all caught up. So put in your orders for the JMCC GF water filters, the all-in-one filters made in the United States in our own factory, and we will continue to produce those. The factory is going to continue operating into the future. There's no reason, there's no issue with halting the operation of that factory. So get in your orders. We do have the MR5s and 7 whole house water filters. Those have stainless steel containers, which we do have in stock. And those we will be shipping, so that's what I recommended. Also, you can get, as an accessory for those, the ultraviolet final filter, which will kill viruses. And that's one of the issues. Will this virus get into the water systems? And so that's another question we don't know, have the answer to yet. But the MR5 and 7 water filters have a final filter that's optional. That is the ultraviolet filter. And we still have the above and below sink water filters available. And the filter elements, replacement filter elements, etc. Check out my Patreon channel. It's patreon.com/JMCCSCI, the same as my webpage, the short URL for my webpage. Go to that page, patreon.com/JMCCSCI. And I'm getting going on my postings for my Patreon page. Go there. It's very colorful, a lot of nice postings. And you can also support me through that by being a patron or a benefactor. Just want to mention that Numana Food, I still have it on my webpage, and I have a big sale on the food, on the Econo multi-packs. These are the packages that start at like $1,500 and go up to about $8,000. These are long-term for the entire family packages. They're called the Econo multi-packs, and free shipping to the United States, to the 48 states. So check that out on my webpage. And of course, the containers, the shipping containers are still available. Those are being produced and available. And my wing generator is available. Also, remember the water study. Send in your zip code with your water municipal water company, and I will send you a report. So go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.